Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening and welcome to the Tattered Cover. I want to thank you all for coming out on this cold evening. And also thank you for your support of Tattered Cover and other independent bookstores around the country. I'm going to introduce to you Ryan Warner, who is the host of Colorado Matters on Colorado NPR. Please welcome Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm here, of course, to introduce David. I say I am not here to tell you about the pledge drive. I'm not here to tell you to call 1-800-496-1530. I'm not going to do that. I told myself I wouldn't. David Isay is, of course, the creator, the founder of StoryCorps, which is the oral history project in which loved ones interview each other. And it started with this soundproof booth in the middle of Grand Central Station. I love the idea of creating a silent space in Grand Central. And it grew to include Airstream trailers equipped like studios, traveling the country and recording these stories. And I have a bone to pick with you, David, which is that StoryCorps airs in Morning Edition, and it's always on my way to work. And I'm often late to work because of you. And I'm often walking into work kind of awkwardly, you know, cleaning tears off my face or distracted by some incredibly beautiful and haunting story. So that's your fault, and thank you for it. You know that StoryCorps records these stories. They're archived, and they're also aired on public radio. But there's another prong that's really important, which is encouraging you to interview your loved ones, and you don't need an Airstream trailer to do it. There are a lot of resources on the StoryCorps website about how to do that, good questions to ask, how to listen, even some basic equipment so that you can do this at home. So let's welcome David to Denver. His new book is All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. David is a five-time Peabody Award winner, storyteller, documentarian, MacArthur genius, and author. And welcome to Denver.
Thanks, Ryan. Ryan's not pitching for CPR, but who here is a member of CPR? Okay, good. All right. And I won't point out anybody to do that old trick. And also, it's great to be at Tattered Cover. This is one of the great bookstores in the country, and it's always a privilege to be here. Thank you, Marty, for having me back. And I also see that my mother's book is up here to be sold. So anybody who wants to buy my mom's book, go for it. She's great. I love my mom. So StoryCorps, who here listens to StoryCorps on CPR? Okay. And who has participated in StoryCorps? Oh, great. Great. And now I know a couple people who are in the book. Is there anybody else in the book here tonight that I wasn't? Okay. And who here doesn't know what StoryCorps is? Nobody. All right. Well, Ryan explained it pretty well. This is the first event I have ever been at, if everybody's telling the truth, where every single person knew what StoryCorps was. So I'm a little bit thrown. As Ryan said, everybody here knows what StoryCorps is. We launched in 2003 in Grand Central Terminal. It's this crazy idea. Two people come to have a conversation in this soundproof booth. And with the help of a trained facilitator who works for StoryCorps, three people in the booth, lights are low. Most people think of it as, if I had 40 minutes left to live. Many people think of it as, if I had 40 minutes left to live, what would I want to say to this person who means so much to me? At the end of the 40 minutes, two CDs have been burned. One goes home with you, the other stays with us and goes to the Library of Congress so your great-great-great-grandkids could get to know your grandmother through her voice and story. When it started, I had lots of fears about what would happen. Grand Central Terminal, you open up a booth, you don't charge, and you say, come in and tell your story. I worried about like Jerry Springer moments and people shooting each other. And 40,000 interviews later with 80,000 participants across the country, it's a tribute to the facilitators and the staff at StoryCorps that not one of these interviews has gone wrong. I'm thrilled. We just released this new book, All There Is, which is, I think, the best StoryCorps book we've ever done. And it's 40 love stories of the 40,000 interviews that we've recorded. And we have two people who are in the book who have one of the 40 great love stories in America here with us today. And I'm going to have them come up and maybe read a little bit from their story a little bit later. But I'm going to play some stories. And I'm also happy to answer questions throughout when you have them. And let me open up my computer, and we can see if we can get the first story going. This is a story from Brooklyn. So we'll start back at where StoryCorps is based. And it is a excuse me, let me see if I can find this. I'm not so technologically great. Okay. This is a story about a man named Elliot Ryken and his wife, Honey Ryken. Now, this love book is divided into three sections: found, lost, and found at last. And, you know, I should say that what happens in a StoryCorps booth, because of the nature of what's being talked about, I mean, people really do ask those big questions. And it's almost like the great themes of human existence are the topic of almost every StoryCorps interview. So it's death and family and love, which is certainly, you know, the greatest theme of all. This book is about romantic love in particular. Every one of the 40,000 interviews has hit on love. Romantic love comes up a lot. So this book kind of wrote itself. And this is a couple that it writes itself. Honey Ryken is a twin. She had a twin sister named Bunny. Elliot had a twin brother named Danny. They were working the Catskills in the 40s. Honey and Bunny were waitresses. Elliot and Danny were musicians. They fell in love. Honey married Elliot. Bunny married Danny. So this is like shooting fish in a barrel. Like, you can't. So this is a little bit about their love story. This is Honey and Bunny at a StoryCorps booth.
When we met, you and your sister couldn't tell us apart, and we couldn't tell you two apart.
But by the end of the summer, there was no chance of separating us, and we had a double wedding. You and I were married the same day as Bunny and Danny were married, and it was two brides, two grooms, one set of parents for each. The gowns were identical gowns. The flowers were identical.
We both went on our honeymoon to Miami Beach by different trains.
Yeah, so people
would be so obvious that people would be staring at us. You know,
yeah, the twins that married the twins.
What did you think about marrying me many years ago?
You bowled me over with your way of kissing and the way you hold me when we dance. You're not a fantastic dancer, but you hold me fantastically, and I feel it. It's genuine. You're just not phony. I don't think you have a phony bone in your body. And I never thought anybody lasts this many years.
Like just yesterday, it was our 50th anniversary.
Yeah, now it's 11 years after that.
Yeah.
I never feel, what will he do if I die first? You know how to open tuna fish. You know how to smear it with mayonnaise. You will not fall apart. You'll feel sad when I'm gone, but you'll manage, and that makes me feel very good. Thank you for being you, Elliot. You made my life complete.
And I say the same. You made my life complete, and we hope we go on for another 50 years.
I'll take five good ones. Five good ones. And I'll say, thank you, God.
You know, I think when I listen to that story, I think it's Honey who says to Elliot that he is authentic. You know, I think in some ways that's the clarion call of and the strength of StoryCorps. You know, when a lot of people talk about crying when they hear StoryCorps stories on the radio. And, you know, I think in many cases, the StoryCorps stories aren't sad, although I will play you some sad ones tonight, I warn you. But I think what the reason people get emotional when they listen to StoryCorps stories often is that, you know, we're surrounded by so much phoniness and nonsense, especially in the media. And when people come to StoryCorps, they're not looking to get rich. They're not looking to get famous. It's a simple act of generosity. You're hearing two people. You know, part of the beauty of radio and what I love about radio is that, you know, the soul is kind of contained in the human voice. It's so intimate. And if someone's being phony, you can just read it immediately. And when you hear these voices, you know, no one's being phony. And you often hear people in these StoryCorps stories. They're all everyday people. But they're people who are living lives at their best and to their fullest. It's lives of generosity and courage and decency. And that, when you hear those stories, I think that, and I also think what you're hearing in many cases is the kind of poetry and grace in the language and the stories of these people. And you're kind of, I think, walking on holy ground when you hear these stories. And that's why we get the concerns about accidents and stuff on Friday morning when people are driving, and lots about crying and mascara running. Does anybody have any questions about StoryCorps before I go on and keep playing stories? Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, certainly having someone there in the booth with you that you know brings out a lot of honesty,
right?
Because you can call each other
right
on things. Are there also times when you feel like things aren't being said because of the other person in the booth?
Now, the other person being – so the people in the booth are you and a family member and the facilitator.
Right. I'm not talking about the facilitator. I'm talking about –
well, it's interesting because I think there's something about there's something about the three people in the booth. And, you know, you find that people who are often people who are uncomfortable talking, the fact that the facilitator's there will make them the facilitators call it bearing witness when they're what they do in the booth. They do a lot of things. They keep logs, make people comfortable, ask questions. But I think that if there's another person in the booth that where, you know, if let's say it's you have a grandfather who's difficult, who says, like, I don't want to tell you this story, you've heard it before, they'll turn to the facilitator who kind of acts as the ears of the world and just kind of open up. So it's that dynamic of the three people, you know, that makes it sort of, I think, a fairly perfect experience for people. So, yeah, people do open up. And what we find in every one of these interviews is, you know, and this is part of the nature of having a microphone knowing that this stuff is going to go to the Library of Congress, it gives you the license to have a conversation you've never had before. So you're always going to find out things you didn't know. And, you know, I think what's most important about StoryCorps, that interview experience, is that the act of doing an interview with a loved one and looking them in the eyes and asking them, who are you and what have you learned and how do you want to be remembered, is a profound way of saying that I love you to someone. And actually, often at the end of the interview, people will turn the table and the person doing the interview will tell the person who's being interviewed what they mean to them. And what StoryCorps is it's an opportunity, both through the act of asking the questions and often through actually saying how much someone means to you, of stopping telling people who we think know how much they matter to us exactly how much they matter to us. And not waiting until they're gone. I'm going to play another story. This is a story that I think speaks to that poetry in the language of people. And I've kind of fallen in love with this story over the last couple of weeks. This is a man named Paul Wilson. This is very like meat and potato StoryCorps. 93 years old. He's in the booth with his daughter, Marty Smith. And he wanted to talk about meeting her mother in the 1940s. Paul was working in the top floor of an office building in Wichita, Kansas. And Wichita is where this interview took place. So this is 93-year-old Paul Wilson. This is recorded 2 years ago with his daughter, Marty Smith.
One day I was waiting in the lobby for the elevator. The door slid aside, and there she stood. The prettiest girl I had ever seen. She was the operator. There were three or four other people on the elevator, and I was the last one on floor number 10. And she opened the door, and I said, thank you. And she said, you're welcome. That was the total conversation, that first contact. Of course, in the next few days, I saw her, but I was so backward and bashful that I didn't say anything to her except 10.
She said, yes, I know. Thank goodness she broke the ice. She said, do you know where you can get some good chop suey? How about that for an opening? I said, sure. The cafe across the street is a Chinese cafe. They serve chop suey.
I sensed that she set that up.
I realized later she did. When I said I eat there every day, she said, oh. I realized I had an opening. And we had chop suey, and we got acquainted. We got married right there in my mother's living room, and we had a 63-year honeymoon. And as you often say to me, when we part company, you say, life is good. And I have to think, yeah, life is good, even though I've lost my sweetheart.
Who was it that said the best thing a man can do for his children is to love their mother?
I did my best.
You did.
We were real lovers. And every day is a memorial for her.
I'm really, with the best thing about being on tour and the best thing maybe about this whole job is getting to meet people who have participated in StoryCorps and whose stories I've gotten to know so well through the radio and in the book. And I'm really honored to have two people who have a phenomenal story in all there is here tonight. And they were kind enough to come, even though they have a one-month-old baby and a 19-month-old baby. And I have two little ones, too, and this is above and beyond the call of duty. Joey and Deloro Guerrero met as soldiers in Iraq. They're in the found section, this first section of all there is. Now, would you be comfortable reading a little bit from the book? Okay, so come on up. I had pulled an excerpt, but I didn't get it. I just flew in and didn't get a chance to print it out. So I'll just point where to read from, and then at some point we can just...
Do you have a stool?
So why don't you just read
defining moment.
Yeah. So this is Joey and Delora were soldiers together, and Joey was interested in Delora, and Delora would have nothing of it. They were friends. And then that changed.
Okay. Well, let's see. The defining moment was when I was about to leave on R&R, but a sandstorm kept me in Baghdad. We were outside, and you were helping me with my bags by the door of the tent. All of a sudden, we get indirect fire, which means mortars started falling. Boom, boom, boom. You know, shaking my core within. It wasn't the first time I had heard them, but it was the first time I was standing outside talking while they were going off. So I ran to the bunker, and eventually he came behind me, casually strolling in because he had been through this a few times before. And then we were crouching across from each other in the bunker, waiting for the all clear. I was just looking at you, and it was like a romantic movie scene where all the visions of the last 4 months came into play. Everything we talked about, how you talked to your kids on the phone, the fact that you called your mother, how you treated me, all of it just came together while I was looking at you, and I thought, you know what? Life is way too short to pass you up. I can't let this one go or I'm a fool. So when I went on R&R, I had you on my mind. And when I got back, we would walk every night just to get away from the other soldiers and talk. And our walks were down the flight line. It doesn't really sound romantic, being dressed, fully dressed in uniform with weapons slung on our backs. But from our perspective, we did what normal couples would do. We were just in Iraq. Shall I continue?
You want to read your part?
Yeah, I'm kind of like emotional right now. So.
Okay. So can I read you?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll say.
But from our perspective, we did what normal couples would do. We just did it as a couple in Iraq.
You picked out a ring online, and when you handed me the box, more mortars hit. We had to evacuate and go back into the bunkers, and I thought, is this a sign? Later that day, you walked me home.
That's when I got down on my knees with my weapon slung on my back, hoping we weren't going to get hit. And it wasn't your traditional engagement ring box. It was more like a post office box. And I tore that open and said, would you marry me?
I was kind of hesitant at first. Being proposed to in Iraq is not what every girl dreams of. But I knew you were the one for me. So when you said, do you want me to wait? I said, no, this is where we are. This is the moment.
You didn't turn your back on me. You gave me a chance and you accepted me. I can't ask for anything better than you. Thank you both. Thank you. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Thanks for coming. Thank you. I have to say that thank you both. And when I sign books at the end of this reading, I think the more important signature to get is these two signatures. So they're like the second or third story in the book. And, you know, one of the things about StoryCorps, I think, that we learn from these stories listening on the radio is that, you know, there's a we as a country are not as divided as you might think from watching the commercial news, reading the newspapers, that when you get down to it, there's a lot more we share in common than divides us. And if we spent more time listening to each other and less time screaming at each other, we'd be a better and stronger country. And that's part of what I hope that that StoryCorps will help engender. So thank you both, and thanks for sharing your story, and congratulations on the new baby. Next time you come, you have to bring them both, okay? I am going to play a story from the lost section of All There Is. We've launched a series of special initiatives with StoryCorps. We have an African American initiative, which is now the largest African American oral history project ever created, a Latino project called Historias. We have a project for families now in hospice and palliative care, a project for families who have a loved one with Alzheimer's. And we have our first initiative was with 9/11 families. And this is every family who lost a loved one on September 11th comes to StoryCorps to leave a record of their life. And I'm going to play a story from that's in the lost section from Beverly Eckert. She lost her husband, Sean Rooney, on September 11th in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. And she recorded her tribute to Sean, her memorial to Sean, 5 years after 9/11, so in 2006. So this is Beverly Eckert.
Sean had warm brown eyes and dark curly hair, and he was a good hugger. We met when we were only 16 at a high school dance. And when he died, we were 50. It was about 9:30 a.m. when he called, and he told me he was on the 105th floor, and he'd been trying to find a way out. And he told me that he hadn't had any success, and now the stairwell was full of smoke. I asked if it hurt for him to breathe, and he paused for a moment and then said no. He loved me enough to lie. We stopped talking about escape routes, and then we just began talking about all the happiness we shared during our lives together. I told him that I wanted to be there with him, die with him. But he said no, he wanted me to live a full life. As the smoke got thicker, he just kept whispering, I love you, over and over. I just wanted to crawl through the phone lines to him and hold him one last time. Then I heard a sharp crack, followed by the sound of an avalanche. It was the building beginning to collapse. I called his name into the phone over and over. Then I just sat there, pressing the phone to my heart. I think about that last half hour with Sean all the time. I remember how I didn't want that day to end, terrible as it was. I didn't want to go to sleep, because as long as I was awake, it was still a day that I'd shared with Sean. You know, and he kissed me goodbye before leaving for work. I could still say that was just a little while ago. That was only this morning. And looking back, and all that has happened since he died, and the causes I fought for, and the things I've done, I just think of myself as living life for both of us now. And I like to think that Sean would be proud of me.
That story ended up becoming a memorial for Beverly Eckert as well. She was killed on Continental Flight 3407, which crashed near Buffalo on February 12, 2009. She was on her way home to visit with Sean's family to celebrate his birthday. I want to read another 9/11 story that is in this book, I just love the language. It's just wonderful. This is a woman named Gran Kestenbaum. And she was married to Howard Kestenbaum and came to StoryCorps to leave a memorial to him. And I should say that, you know, almost everybody who comes to StoryCorps comes in pairs. 99% of the people come in pairs. There are always two facilitators at the booth, one who's helping the next person who's going to go in and another who's in the booth with the current pair. If you come by yourself, and you're allowed to come by yourself, both facilitators go in the booth, and one does the interviewing, the other runs the equipment. And almost all 9/11 families come by themselves. Beverly Ecker came by herself, and the facilitator does the interview. And I think it's because the families, the survivors, don't want to re-traumatize people in their family. This is Graham Kestenbaum's story. Howard and I met on Friday the 13th, 1969. He fell on me at a party, and I thought he was the goofiest guy I'd ever met in my life. He was a student at Columbia working on a PhD in astrophysics, but I didn't believe him. He said he was 25. He didn't look 25. He had a shirt that was so rumpled, and he had these old stovepipe jeans on and a pair of shoes, one of which had many, many, many rubber bands wrapped around it because the sole was coming apart. When I was going to leave the party, he said, "I'll walk you home." And I thought, what did I do to deserve this? I don't want you to walk me home. And so he walked my friend and I home. I lived at the time in a girl's residence on West 11th Street in the Village. And my friend and I stayed up and talked about what a goofball he was. Some weeks later, he called me and he said, "Hello, this is Howie." And I said, "Howie who?" And he said, "Fine, thank you. Howie you." And she refuses to date him, and it goes on with how he waits on her step, and he's just trying to woo her in every possible way. And then he says, Grant says, at one point he got some helium balloons and he floated them up. I was on the second or third floor, and they said, "Grant, please come out." The girls thought that was wonderful, but I was embarrassed to death. I thought, this guy is really crazy. Finally, the lady who was in charge of the residence said, "You've got to get that guy out of here." She said, "Give him a date, for God's sakes. Get it over with." So I went out with him, and I said, "I'll date you." So I went out, and I said, "I'll date you someday." He said, "No, you'll forget me. You've got to date me now." So he said, "Dinner." I said, "Oh, no, no, I'm not dating you for dinner." I said, "How about lunch?" He came on a Saturday for lunch, and we went to Washington Square, and he had a package of Crystal Mint Lifesavers and some seltzer. And he split the Lifesavers in half, and he drank half the seltzer, and then he handed me the can. But the next year, in June of 1970, we were married, and for 31 years, we were together. And then she talks about their relationship and Howard dying on September 11th. And at the end of the interview, she says, "People talk about closure. There is no closure when you've lost a loved one. I don't care how you lost them. Your heart is always open." Edna St. Vincent Millay wrote something that affected me. It says, "Where you used to be, there's a hole in the world, which I find myself constantly walking around in the daytime and falling in at night. I miss you like hell." I miss him like hell. I think I'll, since I only have a few minutes left, play an animation. If we can get it to work. StoryCorps, over the last 2 years, has done something that for many public radio listeners and radio listeners, including myself, is kind of heresy. We've started animating StoryCorps stories. Will it actually work? Okay, so let's see the menu. Okay. There was a facilitator, one of these, a young facilitator who worked for me, who came into my office one day and said, "You know, I'm an animator, and my brother, who teaches swim class at the Y, is also an animator, and we started animating StoryCorps stories." He slammed the DVD in my computer, and I watched, and it was magnificent. And finally, we'll never allow cameras in the booth, but I found a way that I think visuals could actually add to the magic of what happens with StoryCorps. We also are doing a big push into schools now, and I think of these animations as kind of a gateway drug for kids because they're not going to listen. This is one of the great StoryCorps love stories, and we'll end with this.
She started to talk, and I said, "Listen, I'm going to deliver a speech. I said, at the end, you're going to want to go home." I said, "You represent a 34-letter word." I said, "That word is love." I said, "If we're going anywhere, we're going down the aisle because I'm too tired, too sick, and too sore to do any other damn thing." And she turned around, and she said, "Well, of course I'll marry you." And the next morning, I called her as early as I possibly could.
And he always gets up early.
to make sure she hadn't changed her mind, and she hadn't. And every year on April 22nd, around 3 o'clock, I call her and ask her if it was today, would she do it again? And so far, the answer's been the same.
Yeah, 25 times yes.
you see, the thing of it is, I always feel guilty when I say I love you to you, and I say it so often. I say it to remind you that as dumpy as I am, it's coming from me. It's like hearing a beautiful song from a busted old radio. And it's nice of you to keep the radio around the house.
If I don't have a note on the kitchen table, I think there's something wrong. You write a love letter to me every morning.
Well, the only thing that could possibly be wrong is I couldn't find a sewing pen.
To my princess, the weather out today is extremely rainy. I'll call you at 11:20 in the morning.
It's a romantic weather
and
report.
And I love you. I love you. I love you.
When a guy is happily married, no matter what happens at work, no matter what happens in the rest of the day, there's a shelter when you get home. There's a knowledge, knowing that you can hug somebody without them throwing you downstairs and saying, get your hands off me. And being married is like having a color television set. You never want to go back to black and white.
The illness is not hard on me. It's just, you know, the finality of it. And him, he goes along like a trooper.
Listen. Even downhill, a car doesn't roll unless it's pushed, and you're giving me a great push. The deal of it is, we try to give each other hope, and not hope that I'll live, hope that she'll do well after I pass, hope that people will support her, hope that if she meets somebody and likes him, she marries him.
You know, he has everything planned, you know.
I'm working on it. She said it was her call. She wants to walk out behind the casket alone. I guess that's the way to do it, because when we were married, you know how your brother takes you down, your father takes you down? She said, well, I don't know which of my brothers to walk in with. I don't want to offend anybody. I said, I got a solution. I said, you walk in with me, you walk out with me. And the other day, I said, who's going to walk down the aisle with you behind the casket? You know, to support her. And she said, nobody. I walked in with you alone. I'm walking out with you alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing in life where you have to come to terms with dying. Well, I haven't come to terms with dying yet. I want to come to terms with being sure that you understand that my love for you up to this point was as much as it could be, and it'll be as much as it could be for eternity. I always said the only thing I have to give you is a poor gift, and it's myself. And I always gave it. And if there's a way to come back and give it, I'll do that too. Do you have the Valentine's Day letter there?
Yeah. My dearest wife, this is a very special day. It is a day on which we share our love, which still grows after all these years. Now that love is being used by us to sustain us through these hard times. All my love, all my days, and more. Happy Valentine's Day.
I could write on and on about her. She lights up the room in the morning when she tells me to put both hands on her shoulders so she can support me. She lights up my life when she says to me at night, wouldn't you like a little ice cream? Or would you please drink more water? I mean, those aren't very romantic things to say, but they stir my heart. In my mind, in my heart, there has never been, there is not now, and never will be another Annie.
Danny and Annie, both Danny personified so much of what StoryCorps stands for. This was a guy, and you know, the way that these, when you hear a story on the radio, when you read one of these stories, they're all true. We fact check these within an inch of their lives. The animators, I was there when Danny and Annie did that last interview. That is their house. That is their wedding book. And Danny looked like that, although he actually, I think he was 5 feet tall and he was bald. His eyes were crossed and he had one snaggletooth. And he had more romance in his little pinky than all of the Hollywood phony leading men all put together. So, and you know, I think I was thinking last night that, you know, Danny, Annie and would tell me that that Danny, you know, a lot of people made fun of Danny. He looked funny, and they'd be waiting online at a Chinese restaurant. People would laugh and roll their eyes. And for Danny, you know, participating in StoryCorps and actually having a chance to have his true self be presented to the world and to know that his life and his story mattered to others was very important. And obviously to Annie as well, having a record of Danny and having the comfort from public radio listeners now who, as it said there, she still reads a letter from public radio listeners instead of the love letter from Danny was very important. So Danny continues to be a guiding spirit for this project. We're at the very beginning of StoryCorps, I hope. We want to make this, turn this into a national institution that someday touches the lives of every American family and moves the needle in this country on creating a country that's better at listening to one another, that recognizes that every life matters equally, which at its very core is what StoryCorps is about. So I hope you will spread the word. Buy the book. Every penny of author profit from this book goes to StoryCorps so we can deliver more service to more people. And you can also knock off your Valentine's Day present early, which is always a good thing. But more important than that, do spread the word if you believe in what you've heard here. Tell your friends about StoryCorps. Go to our website. And even if you can't get to a StoryCorps booth, have those conversations with loved ones. It's very easy to get five friends together, spend $10 a piece, get a $50 digital recorder, or even we were doing, you can use your iPhone, and there are instructions on the StoryCorps website about how to kind of do a do-it-yourself StoryCorps interview, and sit down with those people who matter to you and ask them about their lives and tell them how much they mean to you by listening to them. So thank you all very much. Thank you, Marty. Thanks, Tattered Cover. And thank you, CPR. It's great to be here.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Foden. We have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.